Hi, my name is Rita. I'm 48 years old from Delray Beach, Florida, and you're listening to Beautiful Life with Judy Torres.
I am a recording artist, a radio personality, an actress, a TEDx speaker, and most recently, a certified master life coach. And I am just like you, on this wild ride, a page-turning book filled with victorious chapters and chapters of sheer defeat. Well, I'm here in the arena now, here to help you create a beautiful life. Hola mi gente, this is your favorite chica, Judy Torres, and I want to welcome you back to my podcast called Beautiful Life with Judy Torres. If you are just tuning in, I want to say thank you very much for listening. I'm so excited that this podcast has actually been way more successful than I could have even imagined. So thanks to all of you who are listening from Podomatic, the free iHeartRadio app, and my website, judytorreslifecoach.com. If you're listening for the first time, you don't know who I am, that's okay. I basically have been a recording artist for over 30 years, a radio personality for over 20, even a Zumba instructor, and most recently, a certified master life coach. I started this podcast because it's basically simple. When I look through my life, I've been through so much. I have been pushed down, punched down, knocked down, beat up. I've been at the edge of the cliff, on the edge of the ledge, ready to fall off so many times. And when I look back at my life now, I realize that all those times were to make me a stronger and better human being. And so I hope that this podcast does the same for you. If you're feeling down, I'm here to help you get back up. If you're sitting on the edge of the cliff, I'm going to sit next to you and talk with you. I'm going to talk you off the ledge, and I'm going to convince you that you've got a reason to be here because it's worth it, because it's worth a beautiful life. So on that note, Rita's going to give us her very own story of getting back up. Talk about getting knocked down a lot. This woman is a survivor. She is a fighter, a warrior, and we're so proud to welcome her here.
My name is Rita Pilla, and I'm 48 years old from Delray Beach, Florida, and I'd like to talk about women in recovery from drug and alcohol addiction.
All right, Rita. Well, we're really excited to hear about your story. Can't wait to have this conversation with you. I've been looking forward to it for a long time now. But for now, we need to do the meme of the week. And of course, my assistant, my lovely Wilhelmina, will help you.
Hi. I'm Wilhelmina, and this is Judy Torres' meme of the week. My recovery must come first so that everything I love in life does not have to come last. How's that?
Wow, Wilhelmina. You're usually like funny and making fun of things, but you moved me right now. Thank you so much, Wilhelmina.
You're welcome. Bless your heart. Wait, where did I move you to, Judy?
Well, Wilhelmina, you moved my heart. That's it. Okay. Don't read more into it.
But no, really, why? Did I move you? How much? I'm a scale from 1 to 10.
Wilhelmina, cállate. I want to talk to Rita. Thanks so much for calling in. I noticed that a few days ago, you actually sent me an email telling me that you wanted to discuss this topic. And I thought that was really cool because usually I'm trying to find people. And I think the subject that you want to talk about today is really, really great because so many people deal with addiction.
I live in the recovery capital of the world. I didn't even know that when I came down here in 2013. And I've stayed. So this is my home now.
Yes, I had heard that. I actually performed in Delray Beach a couple of months ago. And they had told me the same thing. But you know what?
Right.
It's a beautiful area. And I would imagine that if you're trying to recover, you need to be looking at something amazing, something peaceful,
yes,
something tranquil, something that lets you just be one with nature because there's a lot of healing power in that.
Right. And then also Delray kind of got like the bad rap too, because it not only has it become the recovery capital of the world, it also has become the relapse capital of the world, which I don't agree with because you can get clean and sober anywhere. And it's just a matter of being willing. That's the only advice I can give anybody.
That's true.
You have to, and I sponsor a lot of women, and I even bring meetings into a detox, which like is like a homeless shelter. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, if I could teach teach you how to do the steps. I can teach you how to stay clean and sober, but I cannot make you willing. That has to come from deep down within your soul.
That's right.
And thank God I got it this time. So Sarita, I'm very fortunate.
If you don't mind me asking, let's go back into time, right?
Okay.
Can you tell me the first time that you were beginning to be dependent upon the substances? Was it alcohol or was it drugs or both?
It was drugs. I've just shared my story actually on two Sundays ago because I just celebrated 3 years clean and sober.
Yay.
But the first time I had my first spiritual awakening when I was 19 years old, I did a line of cocaine and I was like, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. And from that, I chased that feeling up until 3 years ago. And
wow.
It was, I'm like a garbage head. I'll do any drug.
Wow.
You know, alcohol really wasn't a problem with me. It was like the gateway. It opened up the door to other drugs for me. And I became very addicted to cocaine. And at the time, I come from a very small Italian family. It's only me and my sister and my mom and my dad. And my father was like, tell me who you stay with and I'll tell you who you are. Mm-hmm. So he got me out of the restaurant business, which, you know, I kind of needed that at the time. So fear sobered me up for a little bit. And then I guess when I was about 30, I did amphetamines for the first time, crystal meth. And that brought me to my knees very fast.
Wow.
I was married for 14 years and my ex-husband said, I don't want to hate you. And, you know, I gave that marriage away to my addiction. I have three beautiful children who are, they're all in my life from my ex-husband. And they are so proud of me. It's not unbelievable, like the relationship I have with my children. And then when I came to Florida in 2013, I got addicted to heroin. And I was in a treatment center in New Jersey. My parents would always support me. And at this time, I only had the clothes on my back. And I got transported to a detox. And I would call my parents. And they were like, nope, we don't know you. And then the very last phone call that I had, I said, Dad, don't hang up. They want to send me to Florida. And all he said to me was, get on that goddamn plane. And I've been in Florida since 2013. I wish I could say I stayed clean and sober from then, but I didn't. And that's kind of where my journey took me, you know. And how I got at 3 years is that on January 6th of 2017, I wrote my boyfriend a suicide note telling him that I wanted to end my life and that I believed drugs was the way I was going to take myself out. And I told him not to worry about me too much. And, you know, I didn't care what he did with my stuff. I was sorry to do this to him. And I lived on the streets for 2 weeks. And then I blacked out and I woke up 2 days later in a hospital. And that's where my surrender happened. And I believe that that was the grace of God.
So you felt like that was your bottom?
No, definitely. Okay. Back in 2017 was definitely my bottom.
Okay, Rita, I have a couple of questions, okay? Because this is a topic that I don't know that much about. And I'm kind of fascinated. And I think that people listening would probably want to know. Because they say when you begin a habit in the beginning, it's for one reason. But you continue the habit for a different reason. So do you remember when, was cocaine the absolute first drug you tried?
Yes.
Okay. So do you remember why you decided to do it that day? What made you try it? Was it curiosity? Was it that you were partying? Was it that you had pressure from other people because they were doing it? How did that start?
I just think I was prone to the disease of addiction because I always felt like even growing up that I just felt like something was different. I just didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. So I was working in a restaurant and I noticed everybody was like zipping all around. And I said to one of my coworkers, I said, what is everybody doing? And they said, oh, they're doing crank. And I knew not to do crank because I saw my sister do crank and I didn't want to be up all night long. So I said, oh, okay. They're like, but we have cocaine if you want to try that. And I was curious. So I did it and I'll never forget it. It was like, I remember standing in the bathroom. I did it. And I was like, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. And it took away all my insecurities. I could talk better. I was prettier. I had confidence. It changed who I was, you know, and I liked who I was on it. And then it turned on me. You know, I searched for that feeling my whole life. And then sure enough, I just got addicted to other hardcore drugs.
So in the beginning, it was more like, just out of curiosity because other people were doing it? Is
yes.
that what you're saying?
And
okay.
I,
so now you said when you did it, you felt prettier, you felt more confident. So is that what the drugs did for you? Is that it gave you this false sense of confidence?
It gave me a false sense of being.
So the first reason was I started because I was curious. Other people were doing it, you know. then it was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm a better person. I'm prettier. I'm more confident. And I'm easygoing.
Right. And I said,
life is easier.
This drug makes me feel this good the first time. I can't imagine what it's going to make me feel like if I do it every day. And I just continue to do it.
Now, did you find that the more you did it, the more you need it?
Yes. I became very addicted to it.
How fast did it take to become, quote unquote, addicted?
Maybe a couple weeks.
Really?
I was addicted to the feeling of it. Like, wow. I'm not like most people can like do, you know, have a beer. I can't. I drink to oblivion. Like, I just want to escape.
Right. Well, that's it. Isn't that an addictive personality trait, that it's like all
yes.
or nothing?
Yes.
Okay. So I would imagine that you weren't getting the same kind of feeling from the cocaine, and that's why you tried methamphetamines?
Yes. Okay. It was like I just put it on the back burner. I never really did anything about the disease aspect of it. Like, I never got in a program when I was 19. My dad just took me out of the situation. He was like, tell me who you stay with and I'll tell you who you are, which I do believe that to be true today. And then when I, you know, I had gotten married, I had a beautiful wedding. I fell in love with my ex-husband and I had children. But even when I had my first daughter, Judy, I remember taking her to the park, and I always remember seeing all the other moms like pushing their child on the swing and them being so happy. I just felt like I didn't get the book of life. I didn't feel that happiness. Mm. You know what I mean? I just felt like mm-hmm. something was different. So as soon as I was able to drink and party again, I was off to the races. Meth was offered to me. I did it. I loved it. And I took it to extreme.
Well, I would imagine that because you had a family, you had a husband, you had children. How were you able to hide it? Or did they know?
You know, I was a stay-at-home mom and money started going missing. And my ex-husband confronted me, and this was back when the cell phone, you could have a paper cell phone, and he saw this number like 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I'm buying diet pills from this guy, Frankie. And that I was able to cover that up for a while. But then it was like my mind started to go. I started to get really paranoid. I became like a drug-induced schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. I checked myself into a mental hospital.
Wow.
And, you know, he tried to get me clean and sober, and it just, nothing worked. I wasn't ready.
Right.
I wasn't ready.
I heard what you told me, how it mentally affected you. How did it physically affect you? Do you remember the things that it did?
I wouldn't eat. I was very obsessed with my weight. So, I, you know, the skinnier I was, the prettier I was, and I started to look really sick looking. And I had like a gray complexion. Like, I was lifeless. There was no life in my eyes.
Wow.
And I was just not talking right. And it was terrible, a horrible, horrible way to live.
Wow.
Horrible.
Well, I'm here. I'm so happy you're here today.
Yeah, me too.
So let me ask you this. You know, when I was in my 20s, I actually tried to commit suicide. And I remember that it took me a while to realize what the reason was. Do you know deep down what the reason was for you to, while you were looking to feel that amazing feeling all the time?
I just think some people are just born with a void. I had like a huge hole in my gut. And I come from a very loving family. My parents were married 52 years. I have a sister. My children couldn't make me happy. I don't know. I wish I knew what it was that it did for me. I just never felt like I belonged anywhere. And then when I got into a program, I'm like, these are my people. This is my tribe. This is, people understand me in the program that I'm in, you know, and I help other women now. And it's just really, I had to search God. God was missing from my life.
Did you do any therapy?
Yeah. Just last time I was in treatment for 3 months, and then I lived in the sober house for a year and a half. And I'm finally like, you know, on my own for the last 2 years. I go home like every 2 to 3 months for a long weekend to see my family. My children come here for a week in August. My oldest daughter just applied to nursing school, and she wrote an essay on why she wants to be a nurse. And the whole essay was about me, how she, you know, I abandoned my children, to be honest with you. You know, I chose to live in Florida when my youngest was 7 years old, and I didn't realize the burden I had put on my oldest child. You know, she became the mother, but she's so proud of me today. Like, the relationship I have with all three of my children is amazing. I'm a better mom that I live in Florida. I'm a better mom.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, even if you didn't abandon them and you just went home, if you didn't fix this situation, you weren't going to be a really good example of a mother. You probably couldn't have been there for them the way they needed a mother to be there for them.
Right. And that, and I share that in my story when I share at meetings now. Like, I used to have a voice that talked to me in my own voice and told me what a scumbag mother you are. What kind of mother leaves their children and lives in Florida and they're living a life in New Jersey? I was the one that put all that judgment on me. Nobody cared that my children lived in New Jersey. I did all that. And I had to accept that for who I was. And I'm proud of who I am today. I'm not ashamed of being an alcoholic and an addict. It's the, one of the best things that's ever happened to me. Like I said, I help women today. I'm very active in my community. I have a platform to stand for today that any mom can get clean and sober. They can do it and have the, have a life beyond their wildest dreams. Because if I got what I deserved, I would not be sitting here today.
I know that when I do life coaching, when we talk about somebody finding their purpose or helping them have their dream come true, we talk about the bigger reason why. You have to have a really big reason so that, you know, it pushes you forward instead of being stuck to all the bad habits you had before. You know, the big reason why is so huge that there's nothing in the world that's going to stop you from staying sober. So what is that bigger reason why? What is the driving force that tells you, I will never do that again. I could never go back there again.
Because I don't want to leave a legacy of being a mom who overdosed on drugs. I want to leave a legacy to my children that my mom died clean and sober and that she helped people today. You had asked me before, like, what was missing in my life when I was 19 years old. You know, my sister had got cancer when I was very young, and my mom actually had gone away when I was 13. She went away for treatment, and I felt like my mom abandoned me, and I just never felt loved. Even though my parents loved me immensely, I just never felt loved, and I don't know why.
What I'm feeling from what I just heard right now is that the little girl inside you just didn't get the love that she needed because someone else always needed attention.
Correct.
That's so you were exactly never the right priority. And that's why you
Correct.
Felt like
and
you didn't fit in.
Out. I was never home. I was always at teen dances listening to your music.
Well, don't play my music.
No.
I'm joking.
You know, I just remember a time in my life where I was always out. I never wanted to be home, you know, and then it... As I got older, I started to realize my mom, she had me when she was 20 years old. I look at my mom with the most compassion today. Like, she's a human being. She had struggles just like I did,
right.
You know, and the relationship I have with my mom and my dad today is, I can't put it into words. It's wonderful. My parents are so proud of me, so proud of me. And I, that's all I ever really wanted was to make my parents proud. But now I do this for myself because I'm a better person knowing that I have this disease, and you know what? It's the only disease that it gets better, not worse over time. It gets better.
Now, Rita, let me ask you something. I know that there are people listening who definitely have addiction problems. And mm-hmm. there are probably a lot of people out there who tried it once and they fell off the wagon again. Or they were sober for a little while and then some trigger happens and boom, they fall off again. What is it that you tell yourself that you keep on trying? Because that's the alternative is to just give up, right? So what is it that tells you, no, if I did it before, I could do it one more time. I'll try it again until I get it right.
I was told that as long as there's breath, there's hope. And I believe that as long as I want to stay clean and sober more than I want to get high. And that's the driving force for me. I mean, I go places where drinking is served. You know, if I have good reason to be there, I'm like, you know, I don't go around people that are doing drugs anymore. You know, my boyfriend, he has a drink. I'll go sit at a bar with him. It's like the problem was removed from me. And I'm very blessed that I don't struggle with it anymore. All I ever wanted was a peace of mind. Like my boyfriend from 2013 till 2017, he used to say to me, where are you? Drinking and drugging was constantly on my mind. How I was going to get it, how I was going to get the money, what I was going to use that day. I was like not physically here. My mind was somewhere else. Today, I'm present in my own life. And I tell people who relapse, get back up. You have to want to do this more than anything else. And this comes before my family. It comes before my job. It comes before everything in my life.
So in a sense, you have to put yourself first and you have to be the person that tells you that you're beautiful, that you're capable, that you're confident instead of the drug making you feel that way.
Correct. I do esteemable acts today. Service is 100% all of staying clean and sober. It's getting outside of myself and helping the next girl. That's what it is. Even when I'm not in my meetings or not in my program, helping people, you know, holding the door open, being of service. I believe that God put us here to be in service to one another. And I try and do that every day of my life.
You're absolutely right. I heard someone say the other day, I was listening to another podcast the other day, and I heard someone say that in reality, all of us are looking to have the connection to God because we don't know how to have that connection. We look for a connection with other things, with food, with alcohol, with sex, with gambling, et cetera, because that gives us the thrill that typically we would have if we were at peace. You know, I right. thought that was an interesting kind of thought that, wow, I never thought of it that way, that we're longing to be connected, but we don't know how. So we look for all these things on the outside, all these external things to bring us pleasure, when in reality, it comes from the inside.
Right. And, you know, every day is not rainbows and butterflies for me. I mean, I struggle. I got a new job about a year ago. And from the day I started this new job, I was bullied. I was harassed by the women I worked with. I would go home crying. And finally, I brought it to my manager's attention. And they were like, you know what, Rita, we believe you now. Like, we do not accept this behavior at work at all. I still went to work every day with a smile on my face, how I could help these women. And you know what? They all got written up about it. And I didn't look at them in like some negative way. I try to be as friendly as I can with them. But I have a solution today. And I just go to God. I pray, God, you know, help me be a service to these women. What can I bring into this job instead of take from it? And I believe that that's my purpose, just to help people. You know, and that's how I came across your podcast. Like, you know, I listen to recovery tapes all day long at work. I'm the freedom of listening to my earbuds all day. And I listen to all these old time people who are in recovery, and I learn from them how they do it. And it's one day at a time. You know, sometimes it's 1 minute at a time. But as long as I get outside of myself and I help somebody, my problems don't even seem as big when I help other people.
That's totally true. They say if you feel unloved, love somebody. If you feel lonely, keep somebody else company. Things like that. That's great. I have two questions for you. I don't know if you've ever even been asked this before, but what would you like to say if you could have a conversation with the drugs themselves? Let's say cocaine was a person sitting in front of you. What would you say to that drug today?
I would say, I loved you, but you were no good for me. You're no good for anybody. Please stay out of my life. You're dead to me today.
Excellent. You're breaking up with it forever.
Yep, it's forever.
and what would you say to that little girl that didn't feel like she got that attention, that she didn't fit in? What would you say to her now?
Well, I have to tell you a little backstory on that question. When I was in treatment, we did this guided meditation, and the facilitator said, okay, imagine you're in a cave, and next to you is the little girl, and you come up to the little girl, and you put a blanket over the little girl. Well, as soon as I saw that little girl, I just broke down and started sobbing, snot crying. I just wanted my parents to hug me. And I would say to that little girl today, you are loved. You were always loved. You have a beautiful personality. You are beautiful inside and out. You just had to get there by back roads. And today, I honor my inner child. I have fun. I laugh. I sing. I'm very immature sometimes. But you know what? It's all who I am. And I wouldn't change one thing in my life. I think everything that I've gone through in my life got me to where I am today. I believe that.
Rita, we admire you. You know, congratulations on your 3 years of sobriety. I'm happy to hear that your children are in your life, that your parents are in your life. I'm happy to hear that you have found some purpose and that you have found a place where you belong, and it's still here on this earth. And I just wish you all the very, very best. Before we go, can you give the listeners 5 things that you do to help keep your sobriety intact?
I go to AA meetings. Mm-hmm. I work with a sponsor. I do service. I keep a very, very minimum of drama out of my life. I'm not into drama. I go to bed early and I pray and I thank God every day for what I have.
Thank you for being a shining example of what it means to receive grace from God and taking the actual chance when you actually were given it. So God bless you. May you continue your sobriety. We're so proud of you and so blessed to be able to talk to you today.
Oh, thank you so much, Judy. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
I really want to thank Rita. It's really awesome to feel so empowered listening to a story of such survival and, you know, truth. She was just raw and honest. Let's just put it that way. And speaking of raw and honest,
Ay, pero Judy, why?
But Judy, why?
Pero Judy, why?
Ay, pero Judy, why?
No, but Judy, I don't want to talk about why right now. I just want to say I feel so empowered too. You know what I'm saying? I was just like so excited. I was getting like, what is J-Lo call those things? The goosies, like when your skin like crinkles like a chicken, you know, like the goosebumps. Yeah, that. So I had that, right? So listen, I was just saying, I wanted to share this because this was really hard for me and I got over it really fast, right? I was in the car one time on a date with this really hot guy, right? And I put my hand through my hair because I was trying to be pretty and cute. And all of a sudden, my extension fell out. I was like, oh, my God. So I took the extension, right? And I stuffed it really fast into my purse. Judy, guess what? It's still there, mama. It's still there. Because, you know, you never know when I might need it.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks so much. Thank you. Thank you, Poochie.
But, Judy, come on. I survived it. All right? I'm a survivor, too. I mean, I'm like Rita, you know? I'm just like her.
No, you're not. You're definitely special. Definitely special.
Little Judy, why?
So all kidding aside, I want to thank you, Rita, so much for inspiring so many others. Because when people hear this, they are going to be moved and hopefully motivated enough to change their own life. So to me and to many people, I really believe that you are a hero. And this song is for you.
There's a hero. If you look inside your heart, you don't have to be afraid of what you are. There's an answer. If you reach into your soul, and the sorrow that you know will melt away. Strength to carry on, and you cast your fears aside, and you know you can survive when you feel like hope is gone. Look inside you and be strong, and you'll finally see the truth that a hero lies.
So I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. And listen, we all have a struggle. We all have something that we go through, a cross we have to bear. And if you feel that in any way you need any type of help with any type of substance abuse, alcohol, addiction, please call the National Helpline. It's 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. I want to remind you, at the end of the day, there is no reason to cry. Okay, I love you. Mwah. Bye-bye.
Be sure to keep up with Judy Torres on social media at Judy Torres Music. Like the official Judy Torres Facebook fan page or visit www.judytorres.com. Judy Torres is available for group and one-on-one life coaching as well as public motivational speaking appearances. If you wish to request these services or have a potential topic for a future episode of our podcast, please feel free to write to judytorreslifecoach@gmail.com. Beautiful Life is produced, protected, and published through Judy Torres Enterprises LLC. All rights are reserved. Thanks for listening.
I told you there was no reason to cry.